50 years ago today, a landmark court decision became a confrontation between the federal government and the state of Alabama. Brown versus Board of Education in the 1950s had struck down the segregation of the races in education, but Alabama was determined to hold out. President Kennedy was ready to use the power of the federal government to compel the state of Alabama to comply with what the Supreme Court had said was the law of the land.
Too many Negro children entering segregated grade schools at the time of the Supreme Court's decision 9 years ago will enter segregated high schools this fall, having suffered a loss which can never be restored.
Kennedy ordered the National Guard to enforce what the governor of Alabama, standing on the steps of the University of Alabama a half century ago, would not do.
The unwelcomed, unwanted, unwarranted, and force-induced intrusion upon the campus of the University of Alabama, the day of the might of the central government, offers frightful example of the oppression of the rights, privileges, and sovereignty of this state.
But Governor George Wallace could not hold back the National Guard, who eventually escorted two African-American students inside the University of Alabama. Clearly, the Supreme Court arguing for integration was not enough to convince people in some places in America back in 1963 that racial segregation had to end. President Kennedy called on Congress to pass comprehensive civil rights legislation to explicitly enshrine the principles of Brown versus Board of Education into law.
We face, therefore, a moral crisis as a country and a people. It cannot be met by repressive police action. It cannot be left to increased demonstrations in the streets. It cannot be quieted by token moves or talk. It is a time to act in the Congress, in your state and local legislative body, and above all, in all of our daily lives.
It was Lyndon Johnson who helped pass the Civil Rights Act later on in that decade of the 60s, a stormy decade, to be sure. And we want to explore and recall that history with Art Dunning, who lived it. He enrolled at the University of Alabama in 1966, just 3 years after Governor Wallace stood at the schoolhouse door. As one of the few African-American students at the University of Alabama, Art encountered racism on campus, went on to earn his Ph.D. He's now a professor of higher education and a senior research fellow at the university and joins us from the studios of WUAL in Tuscaloosa. Welcome, Professor.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
How much pressure was there on you and your fellow African-American students at the time dealing with both carrying the flag of history, of this change that you were determined to make, and also trying to get an education?
I think there was a lot of pressure. We sometimes used humor to make it easier, but the pressure was there because in so many ways you were offending the racial place concept for so many people in Southern life. We were determined that our parents would be the last generation to live under this racial caste system called Jim Crow. We were moving away from the customs, practices, and laws and policies of the past, and we were speaking new lines in a play, and people did not know how to handle that. So we had to address that as well as trying to pass biology, chemistry, physics, and all the other things you do as a college student.
You say you were speaking the lines of a play that people didn't necessarily want to hear, this racial justice narrative. But what lines were spoken to you in hatred and anger about these changes by white students, if you can recall?
I think some of it was spoken, some was unspoken. For example, a couple of classes I walked in, some of the students got up and walked out, or step off the sidewalk when you pass, or sometimes in a crosswalk, drive very close to you in a car. And just the sort of things that just created a nuisance at times. But it was nothing that was going to cause anybody to take a step back.
You, among other things, helped to desegregate the University of Alabama football team, the idea of which seems so utterly preposterous today, the idea that African Americans were not allowed to play football at the University of Alabama. That just seems like another galaxy, not another century.
In a sense, it's amusing because we were involved in a system that was very depraved and obscene, which is to exclude people because of race. And one of the things that caused some of us to go on the football field as walk-ons is that it was alleged that one of the coaches said Negro athletes at the time did not have the academic ability or the physical ability to participate in Southeastern Conference sports. That seems absurd in 2013. But that was what was said, and we knew that was not the case. So anywhere that we could poke a stick in the eye of this sort of racial Jim Crow system, we made it our business to do that.
And as you walk the campus of the University of Alabama today, any hints of that history that you lived? Is it a completely different place?
It's a completely different place. I'm fascinated by the normalization of presence of students from all over the country, students from around the world, and African-American students who, they've always had cell phones, they've always had cars, and they've always had options and choices, and they, in many ways, don't have a feel for this sort of what I call a very perverse way to conduct human affairs.
Which, as much as it is important to remember history, the difficulty of students today to recall it is probably on some level a good thing from your perspective, even though people do need to be reminded.
I think it's mixed. I think it's a good thing, but also I take a long view of history. We had some centuries of slavery. We had 100 years of Jim Crow. We've only had 50 years of an open system. And in many ways, long-term success, it may be too soon to know. And so in many ways, it's nice for students not to remember, but I think any culture ought to be able to tell its stories. And if we ignore that, I don't think that's a good thing. I'm not suggesting that we place a chip on someone's shoulder, but you do need a sense of the past and a sense of the memories, because all of these students stand on the shoulders of a lot of people who gave it all to give them the space here.
Including your shoulders. So what do you make of the Supreme Court considering, we should know very, very soon, the outcome of the affirmative action case, Fisher versus University of Texas?
The University of Alabama started in 1831 and didn't open to African Americans until 1963. So when I hear affirmative action and that we've had enough of this, and I'm a deep, passionate person about achievement, I felt that way when we were excluded. So on the merits of affirmative action, I think in the beginning it was to rectify some of the sort of exclusion and deprivation. So when do you have enough of that? But in many ways, when you look at the history of the United States, African Americans were excluded for generations in full participation of life. So what is the answer for American society? I think that's an open question, and I don't know how the court will address that. But as a citizen, I have some very conflicting feelings about how you right the wrongs of the past, and if you indeed can do that. I don't know if you can.
Art Dunning was a part of the desegregation of the University of Alabama. He enrolled at the university in 1966 and helped to desegregate the football team. Today, he's a professor of higher education and a senior research fellow at the University of Alabama. Professor, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And as the Supreme Court is set to hand down the decision in Fisher versus the University of Texas, a case that could change affirmative action, we want to know where you fall. Is affirmative action still necessary in 2013? Has enough time passed? Call us at 8778-MY-TAKE. Send us a tweet at The Takeaway. And thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry, broadcasting from Minnesota Public Radio. I'll be back in New York tomorrow. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.